Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. Today we are joined by Alex Norman. Alex is Head of Frontend at Upside Technology. It's great to have you join us today, Alex. Thank you for taking the time to do this with me today.
Thanks for inviting me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this. To get us started with this, could you give us a bit of background on your career history in technology and how you've kind of, I don't want to say navigated, but how you've kind of worked that to get to where you are today?
Sure, of course. I've always had an interest in computers from a young age anyway. So I kind of knew for a while what I wanted to do at university, computers. So I did a computing degree at Imperial in London. Wow. So I enjoyed. And then initially I wanted to go into film. So I did actually start working in the film industry in Pinewood and places, wow. More on the rendering side of things and setting up render farms. But then decided that wasn't quite for me and wanted to just do more making of products, basically. So I started joining different companies over the years and slowly started Java in the back end back then, and a bit of Swing as well. It's like an old front end library for Java. But then I went to work for Expedia at one point. We're working on some exciting kind of hotels and flight sites. And that's when I kind of really wanted to switch into more front end land. As I did more and more working for different places, I just really enjoyed making products, and I love design and art. And getting involved, one foot to either side of that, I really like. So kind of one in the product, one foot in the technical side. So what's possible, not possible? What can we cut now? What can we do later? So I just gravitated more and more and specialized, I guess, more and more in the front end thing. Then what else next on my list was we had worked in finance, just kind of gravitated from a few startups to finance. And I really got involved product side of this. I joined a small hedge fund where I really helped them go from no technology Excel spreadsheets and built a whole internet with the help of others. So this is just a few to help them just get information. So that really got me involved in talking to different roles, from compliance to traders to operations, and did some financial training there as well. Some courses I really enjoyed and got more and more into fintech side of things, and then led where I am today, which is a fintech startup. And we're trying to improve people's, make people a better investor by moving them from one stock, just trading one stock, which you do on rival apps, to having a more rounded experience where we can help you discover things, help you build a portfolio, help you have a diverse portfolio, all these kind of things. So it's a much more, very much a design and product challenge as well as a front end challenge.
Yeah.
So, and just keeping up, just because I enjoy the front end a lot more, I find follow a few people on Twitter and keep my knowledge up to speed just because I enjoy building things.
And, you know, you mentioned keeping up to date on Twitter just briefly. I was wondering what other resources you rely on to stay ahead of the curve with technology.
Oh yeah, that's a tough one. Always changing. I think over the years that I try not to read everything. I think focusing on things you enjoy and like helps just keep up to speed a bit naturally, I think, without being overwhelmed by the world of everything.
Yeah.
Focusing on front end, particularly nowadays, a bit more mobile based, React Native. That helps cut down the universe quite a bit. And my personal way of doing it is there's a website that lots of technology people read called Hacker News. Visit that every so often. Yep. My personal favorite way is Twitter, and keep a small follow list and follow some key front end focused engineers. From places like Facebook and Google and Cloudflare. I kind of had a little list going on Twitter where I can just see what their recent tweets, and they kind of pick up on what they think are important topics or what they're thinking about, whether it's something that's not React or the next thing that after React, which will happen at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I kind of occasionally check in there. And those are the two main ones, I think.
Yeah, excellent. And also, we've spoken a little bit before the recording today, and you and your team have built the app for Upside Technology in 3 months.
Yes, and we've had lots of...
That's pretty outstanding.
Oh, thanks. The background to that is I joined a friend, the CTO, Robin Hamilton, last year. We had the initial business idea was we've pivoted basically in the last 3-4 months to build this more consumer-based mobile app yeah. help people best. So we helped build the team from 4, started last September, to 11. So we had kind of general working knowledge together. And when we pivoted to build a mobile consumer app, we already had a nice working relationship with everyone, and we all got on well, which is great. And the key, I think a few key points were proposed by myself to help get this app out quicker and to focus on the product. It's all about the product. The few key points I think that really help move fast is a sense of ownership amongst the team. So each person involved in the product wants, has ideas, is quite excited about what we're building, and likes to take on some piece of work and spearhead it, I say, kind of get the required people involved, enjoys coming up with ideas. So that's one aspect of it. The other main aspect of it, I think, is constructing things so there's not a fear of change. I think everything is going to change. So spending ages on the perfect technical solution is misguided, because it's going to change next week or next month. You will make some wrong product decisions. And if people are scared to change code, then the product will just move more slowly and people will be less excited about changing whatever feature because they don't want to delve into the code. So the way to do that for me is some simple unit tests. So we, in the front end land, pull up the unit tests to what I call the screen level. So that screen level, you kind of test the whole logic, not kind of individual components, lots of unit tests here, then everywhere. You test the overall, how the screen works, much like a user would on an app or the web. Mm-hmm. So click this thing, that thing should happen. Rather than testing this exact network call happen, you test the outcomes, which is, I click this button, I expect this message, you have created that trade. I want that message to be, that's because that's an indication it all works smoothly rather than some error. The simple higher level tests is one way we do it. So they're easy to read, easy to change. The other way we do use this technology called Storybook. So this is all about you having Storybook or each of your screens. Again, it's kind of pulling things up to the higher level, so it's easier to change. Each of your screens have different states. Maybe it's an error state, or a state where you have nothing in your portfolio, or a state when you have too many things in your portfolio and there are different messages displayed, or you're out of cash, or whatever states the screens can be in. You can build that exact story in Storybook. It's kind of a browser for all the different screens and all the different states. And upon you have a visual reference that the whole company can see, because actually Storybook itself is deployed. Website, everyone can see, oh, what's this screen meant to do in a certain state again? Oh, that button looks too big now. Oh, we've broken it, we better change it. Or I can get a feel without having to like click through all self to get a feel for what should happen in different cases. Of course, everyone instantly has a lot of knowledge about the state of the app in different situations and how it feels for a user in different situations. There's many edge cases often in that, such as you have nothing in your portfolio or whatever it is. That's one thing, but the slightly extra bit to that, which I think is really, really powerful, is we actually write our tests in something called Jest based off Storybook and this other technology called MSW. So when you render a screen in Storybook, which makes it, maybe it's a my portfolio and it's a list of instruments, you kind of fake the network layer with tool, MSW. So behind the scenes, you say, for this screen, I want there to return Apple, Microsoft with these positions. So you kind of fake the network call, in our case GraphQL, which is another thing I can talk about if you like.
Yeah.
So we have a fake network call. So it's not quite an end-to-end test, but it's we know the data. The data is typed with TypeScript. So we have this known payload. And then once you have the screen in Storybook, we can actually test that screen in Jest. So rather than mocking the data again or setting up the test again, there's this magic new way in Storybook. We just pull in the story. Let's say it's the portfolio story, and you expect certain things to happen, but you already know what's there. You can see what's there in front of you. So you know, oh, I expect to click the trade button and this happens, or I expect there to be 5 things in my portfolio because I know I locked the data. I know there's meant to be 5 stocks, Apple, Microsoft. So that's really powerful. It means writing tests are really simple, quick, easy to read, easy to change. I think that's been really, really powerful. And the final piece, I'm a big fan of something called GraphQL. So I don't think one should work in a silo in the front end. It's very much collaboration between back-end designers and others, obviously, product managers and things. And GraphQL is a great meeting point of your data, I think. And we made the concerted choice to write it in JavaScript. So we're using this thing called Apollo, Apollo Server. So the idea is, front end or back end, can write this GraphQL layer, which is a way of getting data that's different to REST, and much quicker to change. Again, it's much quicker to change the query in GraphQL than it is REST, I think. So it's quicker to change screens without changing the backend service so much. So either side of the fence, let's say, can edit that, write code, submit PRs, but also it's a great collaboration point of about data. What is our data? GraphQL is a tree of data. Everything's connected. A portfolio has a list of positions. A positions has a list of trades behind it, things like that. So it's common talking point, which is great for collaboration. We're going to implement this thing. Let's talk the data model first. You can even implement the data model with mock data straight away without having to implement the service. So the front end, once that common bit is done, even with fake data, you can go away and do your respective bits of work, back end, front end, because you know the kind of data model that you're working with. So I think it's been really helpful, and that ties into the product as well. If we can't model something simply in the data layer, how are we going to explain this complicated relationship to a user in the UX and the copy? So that's been really great. Is that a good summary?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much that I can go off with this. Immediately, what strikes me is that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, it seems like Upside Technology is quite a forward-thinking business. And, you know, you mentioned that you're implementing new technologies. And my initial question would be, because new technologies are coming out all the time, you know, there's Flutter, there's always hype around these things. How do you know which ones are actually worth your time and actually worth implementing into the business? Because some of these decisions are pretty big.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. It's a hard one. I think it's somewhat experience, mainly based on the people you have. What do people want to do, like to do? So that's definitely part of the experience. Something could be really, really cool, but if no one's using it and it's likely to get, say, deprecated in the open source sense, maybe no one's really committing to that project. I don't think it's got a good long-term future. A crude metric for that is the number of GitHub stars, kind of an indication of popularity. So it's just a mixture of experience of knowing what problems this new thing solves or doesn't solve, what team you have, what they enjoy doing. I think if everyone's going to be a bit overwhelmed by new technology, it's definitely out already. Yeah. Because there's no point. You want people to get involved in building the product, and the tool should fit well in that kind of workflow.
Right.
As well as understanding what's the current state of play is. Say React is React has some downfalls that other frameworks are trying to address, but there's no magic bullet. Also realizing that, so there's no magic framework. Just understanding the trade-offs, and then taking a calculated bet is not the right word, but a calculated decision to say, let's go for this one because of these reasons, and see what goes. But with the previous talk about tests and things like that, not every tech decision is irreversible. Obviously, some are somewhat reversible. Let's say your choice of language, whether it's Kotlin or Java, that's or something like that. That's harder to change. But at this next level, packages should be able to change as you, we've gone along. We tried a certain graphing library, say, to our chart, realized it wasn't for us. But with good tests and that ability to change things, so have a good workflow, friendly workflows. Well, we don't want to kind of have pull request reviews that are kind of too opinion based. So people are happy to take something on. It's like, I don't think this thing's very good. I think we should change it. Because it will benefit the product for these reasons. Often we can go, that sounds great. It aligns with what we want to do. We know that's a problem. So it's a mixture of things.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's really interesting because that's kind of decisions around what tech you use in a business. But then if you think about people at the start of their careers, say if they've just come out of university or just done a code camp or wherever they might be, how on earth, with the options that they have, How on earth, it must be so overwhelming to decide what tech stack to initially learn. You know,
I think the general advice I would give is don't get too hung up in it and understand what the technology you've chosen is doing and not doing. Perhaps, I know that comes with time as well. That's a hard one to get off the bat. I think the best solution is just to try it. Build a thing, not build a thing. And get that start down the road and see what problems you come up against and try and understand why your chosen technology is presenting the problems in that way, and is there a better way to do it? So it's framing the question a bit differently. There's no wrong choice generally. Yeah. They just all have pros and cons. So I think it's better just to, a lot of the processes you find when trying a new technology are the same anyway. I know it's all about breaking down a problem into manageable chunks and attacking them, not getting too overwhelmed. Those kind of things are the same across technologies. Yeah. So I think that's just crack on.
Just try something.
Just try it.
Just give it a go.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you should, I find with Google searches or Stack Overflow or Twitter threads or Reddit, or Hacker News is a great place. You kind of, if you go back over a few days or months, you kind of get a feel of what people are talking about in general, and then you can pick one of them. People are talking about React or talking about React Native or Flutter, or if it's mentioned once and never again, maybe it's a bit too niche, or maybe that's where you think, oh, it's just for the future because no one else is doing it. I want to try it because I want to learn something new and get involved. So I don't think it's a wrong choice.
Yeah. Would you say it's important to kind of have an overview of most of the tech stacks out there, or is it important to kind of know one really, really well?
Oh, good question. Depends. I think knowing one really well is very helpful. And when you start a project, it's not just about the language and the more theoretical. Lots of things you might think at the theoretical level, this is functional, this is object orientated. That's one way of doing things. But at the practical level, a large part of it is getting stuff done. Mm-hmm. And getting stuff done often means, especially in the business sense, I need logging, I need error reporting, I need this package to do a graph. And I'm just getting a kind of feel for the ecosystem and what packages are out there and are popular for what reasons is very helpful. So that I think having a more T-shaped approach, so choosing one and getting quite far into it, I think is very useful. Then you can see what the popular packages are, see what works well.
Yeah.
And then when you start the next one, you say, oh, I used this thing before, it's great, or I used it before, it's not so great, let's try something else. Because there's a whole suite of to have a fully featured product out there, it's a whole suite of peripheral things that need to happen. From logging to some kind of PR process to vast building. You want the build to take too long, and lots of things on the edge that make up a product.
Yeah, and there must be a lot of people out there who are kind of looking for their first role in technology now as a junior. And, you know, it seems that in technology there's a lot of competition. So it seems that a lot of businesses now look for not just, you know, competency in a tech stack, but also kind of decipher their abilities by having built something on their own terms or having done some kind of external work like that. I don't know. Is that what you kind of look for when you're employing juniors? Or
personally, no. I think people's free time is their free time. So I don't think necessarily having to have contributed to some open source project, I don't think that's not something I particularly, unless they like to, which is great, but it's not something that would be a blocker for me at all. I think it's approaching a problem is more than that anything. So take a stock of their experience, set an appropriate level. I often have a semi-pair. One thing I like to do in interviews, not a take-home test, and that's, again, people have their free time, but a kind of problem-solving exercise together where we set them on the front-end level, we set the candidate a small task we do together, a bit like a pair programming exercise, and just see, deliberately give a few vague specs like you would in real life. Oh, we want it to do this kind of thing, and just see how it goes, and then we'll make it more conversation-based. It's much more about working with someone than their specific technology because that could be learned. It's just how they approach things. So I think that's more important. So just cracking on and trying something and trying to build a thing, not on your own time, maybe on your, if you're on a boot camp, or just understanding that process of, I want to make this thing, how do I get there?
I really like that approach, though, because everybody that I speak to has a different kind of take on this, but this one seems like the most fair. You know, it seems like a lot of businesses have still not quite got that, I don't know, like recruitment kind of, that it feels like they haven't really got it right yet. I mean, it feels a bit old-fashioned the way a lot of businesses just do that. And I think the way you approach it is really good.
I agree. I think it's not a box-ticking exercise. Whether they even know, I mean, particularly in front-end land, the massively popular libraries React, whether they know React or not, I don't think is massively relevant. That can be learned. It's how they approach things. And React won't be around forever anyway. Prior to React, there were other things, Angular, say, and other things before that, like jQuery. So those things change. I think it's more about working with a person and getting a team together that everyone's happy to collaborate and work on something, work on a product, making it product focused, basically.
Yeah.
To an end.
Like you said, you can teach technology, but you can't really teach a general mindset or, I don't want to say culture, but a fit within the team.
Yeah. Not culture, right? Not culture per se, because that's a harder topic. Yeah, you want someone to feel comfortable proposing things, working with other people. It's definitely a team effort, and not being afraid to having an environment where you can contribute without being judged. Not judged is not the right word, but one thing we try to do, and I hope it works, is we're trying to set the tone of a big point in software development is the PR review process. Go to either extreme, so it can get quite heated.
Yeah,
and definitely something you don't want. And so we try to write a very short document on setting the tone for PR review and trust, basically. So PR review for us is around trust. So generally, cast aside your opinions on how you think it should be done. If it improves the product and improves the code base in general, that's an approval. And you have a little friendly chat in the comment, kind of on a PR, you comment about certain lines. Mm-hmm. So you have a kind of set the tone of let have a chat, but if in general this improves the product or the code base, that's probably worthy of an approval, and try and be friendly to each other.
Yeah.
that way anyone's happy to, what you don't want is people kind of taking a backseat and let the kind of work come to them. It'd be nicer if they feel proactive, involved, and they, I want to fix this because I noticed this will really improve either the developer experience or the product. So that's the kind of environment I like working in anyway, because everyone's a bit more excited, I guess.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I've done my best work when I've been happiest at work. So it's really important to have a happy team, and that's quite overlooked. And I'm interested to find out on this kind of point about leadership, like, how have you learned your leadership style? Where did you learn that? Or have you learned it just over time?
Over time, I think. One of the things I love about technology is the ability to work in different environments. I've worked from finance to travel and other startups. So lots of different team sizes, company sizes, and kind of businesses. So I think it's just learnt on the way. And the things I like doing is just making things with other people and learning of other people. So that was just, it's nothing I particularly, not a particular book I've read or followed, just a kind of general absorbed certain ways of working that I thought worked well when we had a good outcome and all felt good working together. That was it, I think. A few things I think work well, the way we do things, it's all about collaboration. We try and, especially in this more remote way of working at the moment, we try and meet and just talk about cool stuff together. So once a week, have what we call a mob front-end hangout, where the three front-end, including myself at the moment, there's three front-end engineers, and there's no particular agenda. So once a week, we have a 1 or 2 hour chat. We're like, I've done this thing. Let me show you. It's kind of cool. And let's say someone's done a really cool animation, or we want to try this library. We haven't taken the plans. One of us should share our screen and maybe try some coding together, like kind of screen share, pair programming thing to try. Yeah, different animation library we've done before. And that's how some of the technologies got into the stack as well.
Right.
Because we tried it together. We're like, oh, wow, this is solving a problem. We want to do cooler animations, faster animations, more frames per second if it was dropping some frames. MSW was an example of that. MSW is the one I mentioned where you can kind of mock the network layer really easily. And we tried it together. We're like, oh, this is kind of speed up our developer experience. Much more fun to do the testing side. And we just went for it. So it's portioned some time to get it in. And it was a good way of just collaborating. Unless you try new things, having a two prescribed roadmap means you never try stuff. So I think it's a way of doing that, as well as share knowledge as well. So someone might spend a few days implementing a new yeah, the PR. Not everyone can be everyone PR, so we might have done something novel, and it's, if it's hidden away in the code base, no one's ever going to know about it, but kind of exposing things that you think are cool, or problems as well, talking about problems. So we should do this because I'm finding this build really slow. Is there anything we do to speed up the build or things like that? So I think that's great.
Yeah, it's a really good, well, personally, I find the best way to learn about, you know, teams and people in general is to learn from people and speak to people and keep that kind of open kind of atmosphere going where people can say, this is wrong, this is right, we can do this by this, we can, you know, we can fix this by doing this, you know, coming up with sometimes crazy ideas, but, you know, they might work, you know.
Oh, and, definitely, yeah.
And not like closing off that conversation and just being, you know, it's really important to be open because your team are, you know, I don't know, in fact, actually, this has reminded me of a quote that I heard a while ago, which is, I can't remember who said it, actually. It might have been, it's one of the big tech leaders, but he said, he never likes to be the smartest person in the room. And I found that really interesting because that takes a lot of confidence to be that. Is that the way you kind of look at things or not?
Maybe not as explicit there, but I just like talking to people and learning of people. I don't pretend to know everything at all. So people have tried this thing or want to try this thing. I think it's great. Listening to them. Having, it's harder in a remote world, but trying to have this kind of mob hangout where we just talk about stuff, I think it's a great way of informally raising that. So it doesn't have to raise a JIRA to try library XYZ. Yeah. It can come about a bit more organically. I think that's quite fun to work in that kind of environment a bit more. So we try and facilitate that if we can.
It sounds amazing. It sounds like you and your team have such a good time.
Again, we try and ask these questions as well. I have one-to-ones when I can with people who tag. We schedule them once a week with everyone and ask those direct questions. I do anything better from both sides. A great conversation about that kind of feedback.
Cool.
In a friendly sense, I think that's been helpful.
Have you ever experienced throughout your career poor management or bad management or leadership? I'm pretty sure everybody has.
Yeah, everyone. And nowhere's perfect anyway. So that definitely. But that's also somewhat personal opinion. I guess the places I always enjoy smaller places because I like to get involved in the product and build stuff and learn stuff. And I think the places I've enjoyed less are with a very rigid, formal path to getting the product out. They're in a year and a half time. It's a very slow and plodding place, which is also sometimes applicable to very large places. You have to have, as you grow, it's a trade-off. You have to have some kind of formal process involved, otherwise it's too much chaos and no one else was going on. So I just veer towards smaller places because I enjoy them more and learn. I find I learn more stuff rather than getting siloed in a small bit of the bigger pitch. You get to wear a bit more hats. I guess it's not so much poor management, but more what you enjoy as well. There's definitely downsides to smaller places as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like craziness. You have to keep up with the ever-changing week by week product landscape. You're like, what are we doing this week again? What's what? So it's hard. That's definite downside to smaller places. So nowhere's perfect.
I think it's more exciting though, being in a smaller place.
I would say so. I enjoy building stuff and trying to, the particular challenge we have at the moment is a lot around UX and copy and how do we create what we think is a somewhat novel, new way of thinking about investing, not just trading single name, but we're trying to think about helping people build a portfolio and how do you communicate that to someone on a phone screen, that all these different nuanced ways that a hedge fund manager might do to do with, let's say you're trading an Apple and but now you've got the currency risk and how do you explain that? So I think you kind of get involved in those kind of just product questions a lot more and it's more. So as I find that thing.
Absolutely. And so you're building a new product, Upside Technology. I'd love to hear more about that, if you don't mind, Alex.
Yeah, great. We're trying to help people to take a journey from what is out there in the moment in the market, which is trading apps, which are very much single name, to the next step, which is investing, what we think is what we call investing. So we want to, often in these other apps, you say, okay, I want to take control of my money. I am interested in some stocks and shares. Let me buy some Apple or Tesla. And everyone chooses Apple or Tesla or the FANG stocks. But often the question is, oh, okay, I've done that. Now what?
Yeah.
And so we want to fill that gap and help people take control and build a balanced portfolio so we can help them provide insights to help them there. We can also help them discover new stocks. So often, okay, I've read about FANG stocks and Apple, but okay, what about other countries? What are other sectors? And we want to help surface through kind of a social side of things with creating, like, people are going to have ideas on stocks and things like that, as well as just general behind the scenes kind of recommendation engines and other things like that to help surface new things that you might be interested in based on what you currently have and based on your perhaps your risk profile that you want to invest with. So trying to tackle that problem, which I think is a very big gap in the markets.
Yeah.
Because at the moment you either give your money to a hedge fund manager, so maybe it's an active fund, and maybe you're paying more than 1% a year. It's quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
Or your single name, these single name apps just want you to trade, and we want to kind of help people take a slower route to trading, not gut feel of trading, have a more informed opinion about stock. So it's a lot of UX and UI work to help fit all that into a phone screen.
Yeah.
So we're just starting on that journey, and we've used something called React Native and React Native Web as well to target iOS, Android, and the mobile web.
Cool.
On code basis, we're just launching into the app stores very shortly, and the web is actually out already, which is quite exciting.
Amazing.
And then next stage is gather. We've done the small kind of MVP, which we focused on a few core journeys of that larger problem we want to solve, and then going to start gathering feedback and adding more functionality now.
Amazing. Amazing. Really exciting. That sounds really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I've rather enjoyed it. It's that kind of way I've gravitated towards over the years as well. From a personal one, I have a very small stock and shares ISA.
Yeah.
I'm rather interested in this myself, and having had a kind of hedge fund background for a while and some other small fintech startups, I find it quite exciting to try and tackle this problem, because it was so something I'm interested in as well, which I think is quite exciting.
Amazing. Yeah, that sounds great. And I've got, I sometimes like to do this at the end of a recording here. This is definitely throwing, putting you on the spot here, Alex. Hope you don't mind, but it's my show and I'll do what I want. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a few words at you, and if you could give me your immediate thoughts on those words.
Okay, sure. Go for it.
It's all surrounding technology. I've written two down. I need one more. Okay, I've got one. They're very easy, these, Alex, so you don't need to worry. But if you say the wrong thing, you could be scrutinized forever. This could be the end of your career.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, number one is data.
Oh, okay, that's a tough one. I think I meant modeling. I think modeling is the key bit to data, which ties into the product. If that answers your question, that's a very hard one to. Technology aside, I think getting the data model for your product right is unchangeable. It's the hard one, and especially changing it in the startup sense. We've already had this when you're releasing versions iteratively. How do you change the model without breaking what you have? So that's hard. So the GraphQL have a solution, a convention around that in terms of you always add things and never delete things, and then eventually you delete the thing when no one's using that data. So that's a way of continuously releasing changing data model, which is more based on convention and people than any kind of technical solution. So that's what we try and do as well.
That's brilliant. That really is brilliant. The second one is leadership.
Oh, well, we have touched on lots of things. Leadership to me, I guess, is listening and trying to create an environment where people feel productive, I guess. And that often, I think, makes it a more fun place to work. If you're feeling proud of what you've done, productive, and building new stuff that's hopefully used in the startup world.
Cool. This last one is a little bit, it's definitely putting you on the spot here. I'm glad I'm not you right now, Alex. Your team at Upside Technology.
It's been great fun, I'd say. It's been really good fun. privilege to work with everyone. It's a good mix of people, lots of different disciplines and knowledge. So I think I've learned some stuff, which I'm good, and hopefully they've enjoyed working with me.
Excellent. Right, I think that might wrap us up today, Alex. It's been so interesting chatting to you, and I've really enjoyed it. So thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show. I can't wait to release this podcast episode.
Okay, thanks very much. I really enjoyed it too. As well, my wife told me this morning, don't say he's always saying her and all the time.
No, you're fine. I can edit all those out anyway. I don't know. I didn't notice.
Okay. I tried to cut the airs.
Yeah, that was really good. You're a natural. Is this the first podcast you've done?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Strangely, I play drums in a band, so I've talked to stage. I love playing the drums.
Yeah, I'm a drummer in a band as well.
I'm a failed musician, really.
Aren't we all?
Especially because of drummers, they're definitely failed musicians.
Yeah.
Cool, do you still play the band?
I do, actually, yeah.
Oh, what's the band?
Oh, well, we've not got any online presence yet, but we're one of those bands which we've been rehearsing for 5 years, and we've only played about 3 gigs.
Oh, that does it. I just love getting together with some mates and being creative and slow going when you don't meet that often as well, especially last year or so, slow going to create new songs and stuff.
But are you still in the band?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I've been playing with the same guys for 20 years now.
Whoa.
Because I'm 40 now, so when we met at university at 20.
No way.
We had to match in two bands. We were one band, and then it's kids and stuff happen at different stages, so people took hiatuses, and we've actually formed two. But we still practice. Yeah, I love it. We all love it. Still release. We've got a little label going, release on Spotify and stuff. We make about £10 a year divided by 6. Play very, very occasional gigs, but love just creating. We're trying to create a new record at the moment. I just love making music. People in technology, I don't know if you've noticed that there's often enough kind of drummers and tech often go hand in hand.
I have actually noticed that. You'd be surprised how many drummers actually on this podcast.
Something, I don't know what it is, something where the mind works, and maths as well. It's maths, engineering, technology, and drums.
And also sport and CEOs. Professional sports players and CEOs is really big.
I guess so, yeah. Is that Jive, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm not a sports person.
No, not am I. We're drummers. We're far better than sports players. What kind of stuff is yours?
One band is we're quite into techno and stuff. So we're trying to recreate certain aspects of techno using guitar loops. So it's guitar, me on drums.
Oh, cool.
And then bass synth as well.
That's amazing.
So we're trying to set up these layers.
Yes.
Loops and stuff. One of our favorite bands is this band called Battles. The other band is much more influenced by David Bowie and things like that. So much more just kind of indie guitar stuff.
Oh,
piano as well, piano and synth, and so piano led, like hunky dory, but David Bowie type.
Cool. Amazing. Well, I'll have to check out your bands. What are the name? What are the names? We'll give them a plug on the show.
Sure. One's called Tessellators and one's called Trelawney. And we're all on, we kind of run a little record label with some other friends' bands, all on Bandcamp, called Since Records Began Records.
Nice. Excellent. Well, that is really good. I'll definitely get listening to those right now. All right. Cheers, Alex.
Great.
Thanks for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day. And we'll be in touch soon. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.